Welcome to College Football Roundtable, your source for college football coverage, including major storylines,
playoffs,
can't miss game previews, and picks each week. Join your hosts, Dan, Rob, and Jordan at the roundtable for a show unlike anything else. As for Football presents the College Football Roundtable.
All right, so we have two ranked service academies in the top 25. Who would have thought? And it's spooky season for a lot of college football teams, but most importantly for teams in the top 25. Multiple top 25 teams struggled against their competition this weekend. Some impact players are trying to make their case for post-recognition. But hey, what's up, Trash Talkers? Welcome back to the College Football Roundtable, or if you prefer, you can just call it Ring Knocker Radio. I'm your host, Rob, in Fayetteville, North Carolina. We've got Dano Ikebesa calling out of Coastal Connecticut, Trigger Joe calling from the home of the Big House, we got James from Brigade Review, he's popping in on the show today, and we've got Jared from the Boneyard Podcast that covers ECU football. How we doing, guys?
Yo, man, never better. I was at the Army game. That was a whooping. I can't decide if it was better or worse whooping than some of the other whoopings we've seen, but I was all in favor of it. I could watch that. Like, that worked for me. We can do it that way.
Joe, how about you?
I watched some of the Army game, but that game was over at halftime, and I was just praying they got out of it with no injuries. UAB is pretty bad. Not to take anything away from Army, they're looking great.
I mean, the truth is the truth, Joe.
Yeah, UAB's bad. I spent most of the 12 o'clock time frame watching South Carolina give Alabama a dogfight. Colonel Rob nailed it on the head last week when he said Alabama always gets a fight from South Carolina, and they certainly did not disappoint. As a matter of fact, if the quarterback didn't airmail the two-point conversion, that game goes to overtime following a remarkable catch by one of my favorite athletes in the world, Nick Harbor. He's a freak. If nobody knows who he is, look him up. He's Olympic fast, 6'5", 235. He's an alien. I caught some of the Penn State-USC game, which turned out to be a great one for the Nittany Lions when I thought they were doomed. But they pulled it off in overtime, and that was a great game. Then in prime time, sorry, Colonel Rob, I don't think there was a college football fan out there that wasn't watching Ohio State and Oregon. That one certainly didn't disappoint. Could have gone a different way, but the Ducks pull off a huge win for their Big Ten and playoff hopes. And Will Howard took a second too long to get down, or they might have been able to kick a very manageable field goal. Tough loss for the Buckeyes, but I've been around Buckeye fans long enough to know that they have a short memory when they lose, so that's good. They'll still be able to make a run for it if they win out, and they're still a real contender in my opinion. So I also watched a portion of the Red River blowout. Texas is the team to beat in my mind. They absolutely handled Oklahoma. So that, and I mixed in a little UFC.
Yeah. James, how about you?
Oh man, I watched all four quarters of the beatdown in Mikey. And then that was about it. I tuned into Ohio State, Oregon. I watched a lot less than normal. Michigan had a bye week, so that was about it.
Yeah. All right, sounds good. All right, so Jared, we're going to get into your background. So the first part of it is, before we dive way too deep into the show, let's talk about you. So what made you want to start an ECU podcast? Are you just a pirate at heart, or are you a super fan? Well, what's the origin story there?
Yeah, so I'm an ECU alum, along with my co-host, Artemis, whatever you want to call him. We're actually fraternity brothers, and we used to hang out, talk in our apartment after graduation. We lived 5 minutes from each other. We would sit around, drink beer, and talk football, talk sports, and watch college football together. And that was the inception of the podcast. We actually recorded our first episode the week before COVID shut down everything. And then we had to decide, okay, do we just pause this thing until we figure out what's going on in the world, or do we just grind through it and put out content? And that's what we did. We grinded through it, put out some content, had some heavy hitter interviews like early on, and we've kind of kept up that momentum, right? And I mean, we've had guys like, we had Mike Golick on the podcast one time. We had Mike Oresco on the podcast. We've had several ECU alumni. I mean, pretty much anybody you could think of. We've CJ2K, if anybody's familiar with Chris Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's fantastic.
ECU yeah. legend. But yeah, Ruffin McNeil, former ECU head coach. So that's kind of been our style. I'm a stoolie, a Barstool fan at heart, and our content's a lot like a lot of Barstool content where we talk X's and O's some, and we, especially during the season, but during the off season when there's not much content to be had, we shoot the shit with some of the cool people, right? Sorry for cussing.
It's all right. We'll live.
I don't want y'all to get demonetized like that. But
the military is very anti-cussing.
Look, I
was an NCO. If you don't cuss, I might not have a beer with you.
See, I'll tell y'all this. I did Air Force ROTC 1 year in college, and let's just say that I was not allowed to join the Air Force after my first year, but yeah, I would have been able to go through with it at ECU. But that's the origin story or liquor or whatever we can find in our fridge and talk sports.
I love it. That sounds exactly the way Veteran Trash Talk got started, literally right near COVID. I went out on a walk because nothing was open. Like there was nothing to do. So I took the family on a walk and I got back and Nick said, oh, by the way, that Veteran Trash Talk thing, I gave it a name and a logo and started a Facebook page. There's already 2,000 people. You should answer my request. Let's go. 2 weeks later, we did a podcast. So, yeah. And I mean, some Army legends have come through our halls, but what would you have said if somebody would have told you that first night, Jared, that you'll be interviewing Mike Golic within the year?
That one was kind of an interesting one. That was the first game of the COVID season. We our first couple games got canceled, of course. And then turns out Mike Golic's on the broadcast for game one that season, and we went heavy with that episode. We had former the late voice of ECU Pirates. We had who else we have? We had Shane Carden, ECU legend, and then we had Mike Golic. So we had like some really big heavy hitters early on. And I don't know. I messaged him. I got to talking to. I think I was talking to his wife. He has a podcast. I just DM'd them. That's how we get a lot of our guests. I just DM'd them on Twitter. And they were like, yeah, he'll come on. And then this was right after he got fired by ESPN. And I offered him an internship with the Boneyard podcast on the episode. He turned it down politely.
Well, I mean, hey, you got to shoot your shot, right? You miss 100%,
right?
Yeah, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So that's pretty cool. Great origin story. Good background. It's always nice to have, you know, some quality guests to help push your show over the top. But so, I mean, what do you think right now for the team? Do you think ECU is the most underachieving team in the AAC compared to their talent? Would you think that's a fair assessment or no? Because like I live in North Carolina as well. So that's all I hear about. Like coming into this season, it was NC State, UNC, but everybody's like, hey, keep an eye on the Pirates. And, you know, we saw them come out hot. They're kind of, you know, cooling off a little bit, but they've been playing fairly well. It's just they haven't been closing out the games. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, really, this team really should be 5-1 at worst, 4-2, but they're sitting at 3-3. I mean, you have two heartbreaking losses to App State and Liberty that, I mean, the Liberty game was close all the way to the wire, right? ECU blew a 17-point lead in that game. Yeah. They also blew a 16-point lead the week before against App State. And you're like, okay, what's going on here, right?
That App State game was gut-wrenching. I watched every snap of that game. And your rushing defense is unbelievable. But, yeah, that was a gut-wrenching loss.
Yeah, our rush defense has been the best part of our game for really the last two or three years. But really, I mean, teams have found out that they can throw on us now, especially Siobhan Revel. I mean,
yeah,
rated as a first round draft pick, tears his ACL in practice the week leading up to Liberty, and you're missing a big piece of your secondary now. But then, I mean, that puts a strain on the rush defense, right, as well as the secondary, because now everybody's going to be able to play even more coverage, and you got to try to get after the quarterback. So you're not worried as much about the rush. And I mean, ECU going into Charlotte a couple weeks ago, ECU had given up 3 rushing touchdowns on the year. They gave up 6 against Charlotte.
Yeah.
And that was that game. ECU fans were going, okay, we should beat Charlotte. We should have beat them last year. I would say last year, as frustrating as it was being a 2-10 season, you could make the case that that team was a 6-6 team with how many one possession losses. You're in year 6 of Mike Houston. You can't have these types of losses where you're blowing double digit leads and letting your foot off the gas in year 6.
All right, I got a question for you. When I'm watching ECU, they run this super hurry up offense. It reminds me very much of Tennessee. And I actually think this about Tennessee too, but obviously Tennessee's got future draft picks all over the roster. Is that super hurry up offense helping or hurting? I do understand what they're trying to accomplish, but y'all leave your defense out on the field a lot.
Yeah, that time of possession's not been good to ECU, and it's becoming very apparent when you're not able to hit those big plays, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what led to, I mean, ECU has been very explosive early on in games at times, and then later in the game, their defense has just been on the field for so long, they're gassed, right?
Right, yep.
So I think it's detrimental to what ECU's doing. I think having a tempo offense, and new offensive coordinator, John David Baker, that's his thing, right? He came in from Ole Miss. He said, we're going to bring in an electrifying, high-tempo offense. We want to snap the ball every 10 to 15 seconds.
Hotness in college football. This is what the kids are doing.
And with that, if you put yourself in a situation where you're trying to throw the ball on first down and you're not getting 5-6 yards, you're putting yourself in a real tough situation to pick up 10 yards on second and third down. They're not being effective enough on first down to keep that tempo, right? It only works if you're able to move the chains. And we haven't seen ECU have long sustained drives. They have these high, big time explosive plays at times.
Yeah,
but when they don't have those, they struggle.
Yeah, it. When I watch them, I have not watched obviously anywhere near as much as you have, but I've watched a couple of the games, and it does seem like they are in such a hurry that they don't get themselves set, and then they're making mistakes that they don't need to be making. And you know, your quarterback is a great player, but I mean, dude, the poor guy has thrown a shitload of turnovers.
Yeah, he's got 12 picks. He's got to get 13. Those down.
Yeah, and Jake Garcia, right? Jake Garcia.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jake. Okay. Jake Garcia. I'll say this: like through the first like 3 weeks, like he had 7 interceptions in weeks 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, which is not great, right? All can.
But agree they won those games, though.
You win those games, but
you paper over the problem.
And the thing was, a lot of those plays, like you had receivers running the wrong routes, like. You could tell there was in that first game against Norfolk State, you have your tight end transfer from Oregon trip at the goal line and it's intercepted. You have a 50-50 ball that's intercepted. There's been some where it's like, okay, that's a bad throw. He shouldn't make that throw. And then I think part of it is on the play calling and on the tempo, right? The game against App State, you're going down, you've got the ball, you're running a 4-minute offense, and you get a big chunk play. It's like 25 yards.
Yep.
You run the same exact play the next play, throw it downfield again. You got 2.5 minutes. You're at the 50-yard line. Run the ball. We got time.
Yeah, right.
Field goal.
That's exactly what I thought watching that game.
A field goal wins that ball game. Why are you being so aggressive to where you're making your quarterback force the ball downfield? And I think that's part of John David Baker, JDB, being a first-time offensive coordinator, being the first time he's actually got the reins. But then there's some parts of the fan base that are questioning, is he the one calling the plays? There was questions last year. Was Mike Houston, who's a defensive-minded coach, is he calling the plays? Because at times, ECU, as explosive as they can be, they look very stale on offense.
Interesting. Okay.
Hey, Jared, I got two things for you. One's an observation, and I want you to tell me if you think it's correct or I'm off my rocker, and then the second will be a question. The observation, I think that ECU just has like three wide receiver threes, right? They don't have a solid one or two guy. Their top three receivers are basically even in terms of yardage and catches on the year through, I mean, now what, five games, six games? So they've been spreading the love. ECU just loves these chunk plays between 12 and 25 yards. And so they'll fire, and they have enough of these people, of these receivers, that they can fire these chunk plays and move the ball down the field to an extent. But they don't have that one talent out there that's just able to, you know, be the playmaker that's going to draw an extra safety, that's going to do things to a secondary that allows them to have that success be consistent over the length of a drive.
I'll say that I don't necessarily agree with that. Just the thing with the top three receivers, you're talking about, Anthony Smith Jr. or Anthony Smith, Winston Wright Jr. and Chase Sowell. All three of them are transfers within the last 2 years. Winston Wright transferred from Florida State this year, and then Anthony Smith transferred from NC State this year. Chase Sowell transferred in last year from Colorado. He was one of the ones that Dion told he was bringing his Louis Vuittons, and he left. Chase Sowell had an amazing year last year in an offense that was honestly not very great. And then what I'm finding is they do spread the ball, and I think it's – this offense is so new. You've got two new quarterbacks, two new receivers, and they're just trying to find what works. And we're in week six or seven now, and we still don't exactly know what works. Another thing is – and you'll see this. I hope you don't see it, but I it's something I've been – paying attention to quite a bit. Jake Garcia's got an arm. He can sling it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of speed from these wide receivers, but a lot of these balls are so underthrown that it I don't know what's going on. The timing's off or something. The offense hasn't gelled yet. The defense is fine. The offense just hasn't figured it out.
So maybe it's not a talent thing on the wide receiver core. It's just an effectiveness thing, whether that's a scheme or the fact they haven't played together much and all that sort of thing.
That's kind of what I put it up to. I mean, you've seen Anthony Smith have like a breakout game. I want to say that game against Norfolk State was the Anthony Smith game. Old Dominion, that was the Raji Harris game, the running back. He ran for like 130 yards that game with like two big time rushes. And then, Winston Wright Jr. had a huge game against UTSA. And then like last week, or 2 weeks ago, we couldn't get anything going. Nothing could get going. And part of it, we couldn't get our run game going. We're missing our 1B running back, and he's been gone for most of the season. Javius Bond. So you're trying to piecemeal at running back, and that's to have this offense, you've really got to have a very balanced attack.
Yeah, and to that point, I think, and I'll ask my question here in a second, to that point, with this sort of fast-paced offense where you're not substituting, you have one running back in for the entirety of a drive a lot of the times. And so that one running back just gets dog-tired by the end of a potentially long drive. He's getting – you know, 8-9 carries on one drive. Whereas, you know, if you slow it down, maybe you get more backs in, those runs are more effective. But then the question, so Jake Garcia got pulled last game.
Yeah, I was going to ask about this. Thanks.
Yeah. He got pulled against Charlotte. Number one, do you like that decision? Did you not like that decision? Number two, you think he comes back out and starts against Army this week?
Yeah, I think he's the starter. I think he's the starter against Army. He's been dealing with some hand injury. I believe he initially injured his hand against Liberty. I remember against UTSA, his hand was bleeding. I think he's been dealing with something. I didn't agree with pulling him in that game. That interception that he threw wasn't one of the worst that he's thrown. And it was one of those 50-50 balls. I didn't agree with pulling him there. And we've seen that he's just better than Caden Hauser. And look, yeah. Caden Hauser, we've had him on the podcast. I think if you could take Caden Hauser's football mind, and this isn't a knock on Jake Garcia, Caden, if you could take his football mind and put it in Jake Garcia, you're doing excellent, right? Mm-hmm. I think that would be perfect, but I would start Jake Garcia this week.
It looks like they gave him quite a bit of trust. I mean, Caden Hauser threw the ball 28 times, so maybe that's enough for them to realize Garcia is the guy, because he went 11 for 28 with a pick. So
yeah, and that pick was a pick six. Like it just like I love Caden Hauser. He's a great guy, but
yeah, not to shit on the kid or anything. Because
I don't think it's him. And look, he did really well on a bad Michigan State team last year. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think this offense is for him.
Awesome. All right, so we're gonna move on, but I do have one last question for you to think about, because we're gonna bring this up. Our topic for the show today is gonna be coaches on the hot seat. Do you think Coach Houston's on the hot seat? You know, is it another end of the year? You don't have to answer the question right now, but it's certainly something that we'll get to as we dive into the topic. And speaking of diving in, if you're diving into the housing market, we have the realtor for you. Jocelyn Bradley, she's a realtor. If you are PCSing to the Fort Liberty area, she is a veteran who spent her career in Army Logistics. There she discovered her passion for making a difference in people's lives. She's committed to helping her clients find their dream home when they're in the market, and she provides exceptional service when she's working for you. Jocelyn also has an extended network of veteran realtors who can help you move anywhere else in the country. So if you're in the market for a home, she should be your first call. She's decided to support us here at Ask for Football, and she is the right person to get you into the home of your dreams. Go to askforfootball.com, click on the business card. You'll be talking to her in a few minutes. Back over to Dan for the Service Academy standings. Thanks.
Yeah, before we go on, Jared, thank you for coming on. We're super grateful. And for those of you who feel like tuning into the Boneyard podcast tomorrow, James is going to return the favor and go on that show. Jared, we're happy to have you stick around for the rest of the show and pick games with us. If you got stuff to do, we appreciate it. But yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll hang on a little bit longer.
Okay. So this week, Army is now 6-0. They beat the UAB Blazers. They are number 23 in the AP poll. They are number 24 in the coaches poll. We're obviously going to go into a hell of a lot more depth with this on the Army football show tomorrow. But yeah, it's been a good time to be an Army fan. And obviously the Black Knights have a dangerous opponent this week in the ECU Pirates, who have played, you know, very, very good at times, but inconsistently. That one has a noon kickoff on ESPNU. Line right now is floating all over the place at just over 2 touchdowns. And that's it. Number 25 Navy, unranked in the coaches poll, obviously, will take on UNC Charlotte at home this Saturday. I can't believe the Mids have another home game. That's nuts. Navy is walking into a major trap game, coming off of a big win against the Zoomies and a bye week. Tape of that new Navy offense is out, and Charlotte just ran all over ECU, the only team to do that this whole season. I'm sort of expecting a competitive contest, but we'll talk about that later. And Air Force got smoked at New Mexico, 52-37. They continue to lose against every FBS team ever. Air Force outrushed and outpassed New Mexico, but still came up short. You know, I was looking at the stats. They don't look that bad in a vacuum, but this Air Force offense cannot finish drives. Their defense has given up a ton of big plays. Like, this is just not what they're doing. New Mexico came into the game 1-4, so this was one that I'm sure the Zoomies thought they were going to win, but the game was not close, like, at all. fall. Air Force is in total disarray. So, yeah, it's ugly out there.
Hey, two things real quick.
Go ahead.
Number one, if you want a great time, go request to be part of like the Air Force football fans page. I did that. Weekly entertainment on Saturday evenings, just laughing through the comments. One of the questions they ask you, though, they almost got me, is what are the Air Force colors? And I was about to say blue and white because their logo is blue and white. It's blue and silver, so don't let them get you with that. And number two, small detail, but just so that people know where to watch, Army will be on ESPN2, not you.
That's what I said. Did it not come through? ESPN2. Okay, yes. Yeah, thank you.
Sweet.
Okay. Non-FBS service academies. Coast Guard is now 3-2. They have a bye this week. Take on Salve Regina next week at home in New London. The Merchant Marine Academy is, as usual, rolling at 4-1. They shut out mighty MIT 21-0. This is a good team, man. They 178 yards rushing, 160 yards passing. Pat Scribner in the comments noted that Charlotte is 2-0 in the ACC and then said, to quote me, those guys can get bent. So I don't even remember saying that, but here we are. All right, Rob.
All right. So around the American game of the week, this week is going to be North Texas at Memphis. North Texas is still a tough team. They struggled a little bit last week and still pulled out a win. That looks to be the top conference, tough game in the conference this week. Got North Texas come from behind victory at FAU, but FAU is looking a little bit better week after week. So it'll be interesting as they get to their game. Other games of notes is the ECU versus Army, which we'll break down tomorrow night. Navy versus University of North Carolina and Charlotte. Florida Atlantic against UTSA. Like, this is probably a pick'em game if you're a betting person, but the other part of it is Florida Atlantic is trending up and UTSA has kind of been trending down. So this is a perfect opportunity for FAU to get one over on UTSA. And Rice travels to Tulane as they're trying to right the ship to get their second consecutive win of the season. But that is a tough road to hoe because Tulane is tough, man. Like, year after year, you know, Tulane and UNT are usually the top two teams statistically in the American. So we'll see what happens there. But let's kick it over to Joe for the top 10 recap. Thanks.
Yeah, just a caveat. Tulane and James Madison made me more money last year than any two teams. So I will forever love them low-key. But all right, no surprise here. Number one, we got the Texas Longhorns. They made light work of the Sooners as they crushed Oklahoma 34-3. Texas has the Bulldogs of UGA in the game of the week coming up next week. Or this week, I'm sorry. I always do that when I write the outline. I put next week when we're talking about this week. But all right, number two, the Oregon Ducks. They jump up a spot from three. The Ducks pull off a thrilling victory, beating Ohio State 32-31. Oregon is at Purdue this week. Number three is Penn State. They bump up a spot. Talk about thrillers. The Nittany Lions come out on top in a close one as they beat USC in overtime 33-30. Penn State is off next week. Number four, we got the Buckeyes as they come up just short against the Ducks, as we already said in Eugene. The Buckeyes have a much-needed week off this weekend. And then number five, we've already talked about Georgia. They made light work of the – I said it was going to be bulldog-on-bulldog violence. They made light work of Mississippi State, even though the score looks closer than the game was, 41-31. And like I said, UGA has a shot at redemption as they play the number one Texas Longhorns this week. I can't wait for that game. Number six is Miami. No change. The Hurricanes were off this week, and they traveled to Louisville. At number seven, we have the suspect Alabama Crimson Tide as they almost let one slip away against South Carolina, but come out on top 27-25. They better get everything squared away as they travel to play the number 11 Tennessee Volunteers this week, and everybody likes taking a piece of Alabama if they feel like they're down, so Tennessee will be no different. At number eight, we have the Tigers of LSU bumping up five spots as they come up with a huge win against Ole Miss. And another thriller, 29-26 in OT. They have an away game with the Razorbacks this week. Don't let that big game hangover hit you because the Razorbacks play football. At number nine, look at the Cyclones, boys. Iowa State jumps into the top 10, up two spots as they travel to West Virginia and handle a much tougher team than West Virginia gets credit for in their own house, 28-16. Iowa State is at home against Central Florida this week. And at number 10, Clemson, and I can't believe I'm going to say this. I feel like Clemson's underrated after watching bits and pieces of that game, because I didn't mention it in the intro, but I did catch glimpses. And part of me was screaming, take Wake with the points. And I watched about 5 minutes of the game. I was like, no, don't do it. Cade Klubnik is going to throw all over the place. They routed Wake 49-14. They got the Cavaliers of Virginia coming to Death Valley this week.
Rob has spit so much slander against Clemson on this show that so now that they're playing well again, guilty. It's like cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. I don't know. Who are they playing well against?
Look out, man. Look out.
Who are they playing well against?
Right. I know, but I was expecting Wake to give them a little bit more of a fight, and they ran them off the field.
Yeah, that's fair. So, moving to the top 25 losses this year. So far, we've got 34 notable losses this year. Arizona State rolled Utah 27-19. Oregon outlasted the Ohio State Buckeyes 31-32, which Joe mentioned before. And Ole Miss got booted from the top 25 for the loss to LSU. There are only three top 25 losses this week, but there are some near misses as teams that looked solid early did not look so hot this week. So you had Penn State, Bama, K-State, Pitt, and Illinois all won one-score games in like the waning moments of their contest. And speaking of losers, let's dive on into the Blue Falcon of the week. Over to you, Joe.
You know, this segment came to mind, and I thought how much fun that would be. And then I started to feel guilty in some of them because some of these kids are half my age and twice the athlete. Even though I played all sports, but this one,
no
multi. One of those times where I feel a little bit guilty, but there's having said that, however, Will Howard, I know you played your heart out, but the inclusion of the NIL means you are no longer a poor college student. You're a millionaire. So I hope you got your battle rattle on because shots are coming your way. Do you know why the NIL paid so much to get you to come from Kansas State to Ohio State? It's to be a field general of one of the best football programs in the country and to bring a national title to Columbus. I'm 3.5 hours north of them. It's the only show in town. Now, I can't stand somebody who hates on talent, and I'll never be that guy. So I only root for Ohio State to lose when they're playing Michigan. Otherwise, I hope they have a great team and Michigan wins the game, which I'm not betting on this year. Does Ryan Day deserve a little bit of this criticism? Probably, but one more loss and I promise he'll get that. So being at the NIL has made you wealthier than I am and you're half my age. And it's simply because you're a great football player. You're going to get the Blue Falcon of the Week award and you're going to like it, Will Howard. No, I'm just drama for effect. You're paid not just with a free education, you're actually paid good money to understand everything about the offense and everything about the game's situational awareness when your team has the ball. And for that, let me speak English for a minute. For instance, even when your team doesn't have the ball, if you know how long the average play takes, I'm sorry, if I know how long the average play takes to run, if I know how long it takes to run a field goal team onto the field, then so should you. So Will Howard, I know this is a tough Monday and I wish I felt sympathy for you, but you wear scarlet and gray. So suck it up and come collect your Blue Falcon of the Week t-shirt because it was the biggest game of the year and your blunder made it so the field goal team couldn't get on and attempt to tie the game.
Nice.
It's a pretty weak,
by the way,
because I mean, who are they going to be close with without Will Howard? So I hate hating on the kid, but I had to pick somebody. And he was all over ESPN for that.
I think he was down, by the way. Like, I think there was a second left. And if Ryan Day was sitting there calling a timeout, they should have had a second.
Yeah, like I said, Ryan Day deserves some of it. Yeah. But
you're right. He should have been down half a second earlier. But
I immediately texted Connor Rob and said, you know, some of these guys haven't been in Ohio for more than a matter of months. You know why?
That's the story of this year in college football is you got so much talent running around on new teams that they don't know, they don't fully, gel with. And whoever puts it together first is the best team in college football. This is what we've seen all season.
We're going to make it a topic the next time we see a big game where it's an NIL built team, which Ohio State is. I'm not hating versus the system team. No. And how the outcome comes. Because I think, like, we touched on tempo and we touched on, you know, hurry up and going deep and doing all these things. And I think NIL and all these transfer kids that coming in with all this talent and the new systems, that has a major effect on that in the moment.
Yeah, yeah, certainly does. Absolutely. And so we went to the Twitterverse for this one, and with 42% of the votes, the topic this week's coaches on the hot seat. So, gents, what coach do you think is going to be packing up his office potentially at the end of the season? We'll start with Jared to revisit the question that we asked him earlier, then go to Joe and then Dan. Thanks.
Yeah, as far as Mike Houston goes, I as much as ECU fans want him to be gone, I don't think that it's done this year. Even though I honestly probably would do it. The reason being, I mean, you just gave your coordinators, you just gave them 2-year extensions, right? You hire your offensive coordinator, you're paying them both over $1 million to be a coordinator, and you're going to have to pay that buyout on top of paying buyouts for your head coach, who makes, I believe he's at $2.4 million. I don't think ECU is going to be ready to do that quite yet. And then I like Mike Houston. I think he's a great guy. I'm tired of the coach talk. You're the head football coach. Get the job done, right? Figure it out. Like, yeah. But he should very well be on the hot seat. And I think most ECU fans would agree with me on that he should be on the hot seat. I just, looking at it from an administration standpoint, I don't think that they do it this year.
Okay, that's fair. Joe, what about you?
Yeah, I don't know about packing up his office, because he should be gearing up for the rest of the season. But as a Michigan fan, I don't want to see it. But if the Buckeyes don't go to the playoffs, then Ryan Day, in my opinion, is going to either be on the white phosphorus seat or gone. You know, at Ohio State. I mean, the amount of money that was shelled out to purchase that team, I'm only a few hours away from Columbus, as I've already said, but that is what they expect at Ohio State. They don't expect to lose anything. And even if it's delusional,
it's totally delusional.
It's totally delusional. They broke the bank to get this team there, but I'm going to go off script just a second, and I know we ran a little bit long, but have we ever seen what it's like for the Army to swap out something when they put a bunch of money into it? Put that on steroids, and that's what it's like trying to find it. Like, people were saying, get rid of Harbaugh, and I'm like, oh, replace him first. Like, who's coming in and going to do better than he is? You know, so, like, Ryan Day is going to be on the hot seat, but John Cooper didn't deserve to get fired. He won 90% of his games. He just couldn't beat Michigan. So I think that a lot of times it's a Monday morning quarterback thing where they're like, get rid of the coach. And it's like, do you have any idea how many millions of dollars and how many things need to go into motion to make that happen? How many recruits we'll lose? How many recruits we're going to have to now go out and recruit that we weren't even looking at because we know this guy's gone with the coach? Like, it's crazy what that it's like. Change, it's like facelifting your whole university. Like, all right, this is the new guy. And
yeah,
and when Michigan hired Rich Rod, I'd never seen a 5'10" quarterback at Michigan with dreadlocks. And I'm not saying that because Denard Robinson was black. I'm saying Michigan had the Tom Brady and the Todd Collins, and then all of a sudden they got an option team like in West Virginia. Like, it takes time to put those recruits in place. So people say, you know, hire a new coach, and then the new coach comes in like, you suck. And it's like, it's because he doesn't – like, Michigan tried running an option with 6'5" Stephen Threet, who runs a 5'6" 40. Like, you can't do it. So, I don't know. There's a lot more that goes into it than that. But, yeah, I think Ryan Day is going to be fighting for his job if he loses another one, and especially if he loses in Columbus to Michigan.
Yeah, that's fair. Dano, how about you?
Well, when you put this together, you put Troy Calhoun's name on here. And, well, I will agree that he's having a real one and taking – quite a bit of fire in the press. There is no way that they get rid of him that soon. I mean, the guy was Army destroyed their team last year, and that hangover is very real. And they're having a real one out there. But Troy Calhoun is not going anywhere, and no one would like to see that guy get his walking papers more than me, but he's got at least 2 years of grace, I think, banked with the Air Force Academy. Mike Norvell at Florida State University is the most obvious low-hanging fruit on the list.
Yeah,
I'll just leave that at that. And the other one, this is the one that James and I were talking about earlier when I said, hey, why don't you come on the show, is Trent Dilfer. You know, and Matt Scrivener was like, is Trent Dilfer still at UAB? I honestly thought they were going to fire him before the Army game. And I cannot believe that they didn't fire him after the Army game, because some of the stuff that UAB tried to do in that game was just, I don't understand what they were thinking at all. Yep. And I'll shut up. But those are my two obvious ones.
Well, we talked about that last week, and I said UAB is not this bad traditionally. They're
usually talented. They have like every other team in the American
is brand.
They're like every other team. They're like every other team in the American. They got shitloads of talent. Plenty of transfers, you know,
the guy that's supposed to bring all those things together is just not getting it done, particularly at UAB.
Like, for UAB, they like, it's not like they're terrible and have no players. This is not the problem.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll run into mine. Mine is essentially every coach in the state of Florida sans the University of Miami. So like, the state of Florida is having a pretty rough time, hurricanes notwithstanding, but, you've got Florida's 3-3 overall. Billy Napier, man, if they get a bowl game, maybe he gets saved. But like, I think the fans are coming out against him pretty soon. We already talked about Mike Norvell. FAU is 2-4. You know, Tom Herman has a reputation of being a good coach. He built the program in Houston for a little bit, and then he's moved on to other places. But hey, man, you're in your second year and you've got some talent. But the excuse of, hey, this transfer portal stuff, like, I get it, but you're the coach. You've got to take responsibility for it and make something happen. USF is 2-4 again. They've had a tough non-conference schedule, but they can't put it together again. They have a second-year coach. Coach Glosh is in his second year. He might make it out of 2024, but I'm not sure how much longer they're going to stand for, you know, losing seasons or not even making it to bowls. And then finally, UCF, I think you know, the former national championships or former national champions with Gus Malzahn at the helm. They've dropped three in a row. I mean, they got socked in the face by Colorado, and it's been downhill ever since. Malzahn's been around the game, so he knows, you know, what happens when the boo birds come out towards you as a head coach. But can he turn it around? I mean, I think it's too early in the season to really make that determination. I think bowl eligibility may rescue some of these guys, and I say some, but not all. But of all the guys that we have or coaches that we have talked about, I think Trent Dilfer is probably the one that's most likely to get his walking papers at the end of this year, because the team is not on board with what he is trying to sell.
UCF getting blown out at Colorado was a bad look, but of, you know, you look at teams that moved up from the American, and Central Florida is probably better off certainly than Houston. And they're definitely no worse than Cincy. So I don't know, man. I think it's a tough job to go from the American to the Big 12. I mean, I just think that's harder than it looks.
They lost the little guy fanfare when they were the national champs.
Undefeated. Yeah. Hey, well, you move up to the Big 12 and you're in the big boy league. Sorry, go ahead, Jared.
Can I just say anything? Say one thing.
Yeah.
Anything bad that happens to UCF, they had it coming.
Is this related to Scott Frost, Jared?
It's just related to the whole university.
Because
Gus Malzahn last time he came to Greenville, got his ass kicked. That last season, UCF versus ECU. I have no love lost for UCF. I don't know. I've never liked them. Never liked their fan base. They talk a lot of shit. Never really had anything to back it up. They forget that their stadium was empty when they were 0-12 that year. And then they just randomly turned it around. Good for them. Like, I don't know. I hate UCF.
They're about to get some good old corn-fed country boy ass whoop this week because they got to play Iowa State.
Yeah, so, I hope they take them to the woodshed.
I believe they will. Iowa State's actually pretty damn good.
Yeah. And speaking of not getting taken to the woodshed, we've got a commercial for you. So we'll toss it over to Dan for the next read.
Friends, if you have seen this show before, you know that Craig Oxane is the Vice President of Residential Lending for New American Funding in Chicago. Craig is a member of the West Point Class of 1994, licensed to lend in all 50 states, but based out of Chicago, and he is one of the most successful VA lenders in the country. Why? Because he is going to give you super competitive rates in a process that is super confusing. Got interest rates moving all over the place. You do not want to deal with some dude who just wants to make a buck off you. Deal with somebody who cares, who's an actual person who will answer the phone when you call them. Not a call center, not some random big box bank, not some mindless website, get a mortgage from China, whatever. This is how the West Point Network functions. Craig is helping us stay in business here at Ask for Football, and we're helping you get the best deal on a mortgage that we possibly can by introducing you to the man that you need to meet. And friends, Craig does not charge lending fees for veterans. That's a huge savings. It's like $1,300. Get that money. If it is not a lot of money to you, it's a lot of money to us. Send it to us. Shout out to you, Ray. So Craig Oxane, Vice President of Residential Lending at New American Funding. Check him out. His link's on our website. Go to askforfootball.com. Scroll down to his little business card. Click it. Fill out a little survey. You will be talking to him in a matter of minutes. And I'm telling you, he gets five-star service from every single person who uses him, which has been quite a few people coming off this show.
Thanks, Dan. So let's move on to the game of the week. Hey, we're going to brief through Tuesday through Thursday, because we've got games on Tuesday again. So if you are looking to watch some football, tomorrow night is the night. As soon as the Army football show is over, turn on your TV. You got Troy at South Alabama, which is kicking at 7:30 on ESPN2. You got Western Kentucky at Sam Houston, for those of you that are interested in the late game. The late game on Wednesday is FIU at UTEP. If that's your flavor, check it out. You've got Georgia State and Marshall on Thursday night, and then Boston College and Virginia Tech, 7 and 7:30 kicks on ESPN and ESPN2, respectively. Moving on to Friday, Friday night contest, which is odd, but you've got the Florida State at Duke kicking at 7 on ESPN2. Oregon at Purdue. The Spoilermakers are going to try and upset the Ducks. Probably not going to happen, but I'd laugh if it did. Oregon State at BYU. That's going to be the late game. Kicks at 10:15. Start on Saturday, of course, lead with Army versus East Carolina at Mikey Stadium, kicking at noon on ESPN2. You've got Nebraska at Indiana. That should be a halfway decent contest, kicking at noon on Fox. You've got Auburn at Missouri on ESPN at noon. You've got Miami at Louisville, kicking at noon on ABC. Virginia at number 10 Clemson. That should be a walkaway for Clemson in theory, but you never know what happens when Virginia shows up.
Will they Clemson?
And that's the question of the season. Number 7, Alabama at number 11, Tennessee. That'll be at 3:30 on ESPN Plus. You've got Michigan at Illinois. That's going to be a much. Yes, that's going to be a tough game because Michigan's defense is significantly better than their offense, and so it'll be interesting to see if they can, you know, play some complimentary football and get the offense going. You got Notre Dame at Georgia Tech at 3:30. And fast forward, K-State at West Virginia. That should be an awesome game, too. That'll be 7:30 on Fox. UCF at Iowa State, as previously mentioned. You've got SMU at Stanford. Stanford trying to bounce back of that beating that Notre Dame put on them. And then the closeout for the Saturday night slate is TCU at Utah, 10:30 on ESPN. And we will pause for our weekly locks.
Weekly locks.
All right, what are we picking this week, guys?
I went 2-1 last week, got me back on the good foot, and man, just missed the over with the Army game. Like, if you know, stupid second team taking a penalty, what can you do? Then South Carolina at Alabama barely went over, but we'll take it. This week, I have a bunch of picks in the American Conference. So Charlotte plus 17 at Navy. The 49ers established the run very effectively in our last game against ECU. As we have discussed, Navy's rushing defense is not what it used to be. I think the mids win, but yo, the tape is out on that offense now. I think their starters play the whole game, and it's pretty close. Florida Atlantic plus 3.5 at UTSA. I think FAU is going to win this one outright. They really should have beat UNT. I was very sad when they lost because I watched all of that game. I think FAU's got a decent chance to finish with a bowl berth, despite the fact that they started like absolute garbage. And finally, North Texas plus 10 at Memphis. I don't know how to break this to you, but I'm not a believer in Memphis this year. They let first Middle Tennessee, then South Florida with a backup quarterback hang around. That's not impressive on either front. North Texas might win this one outright. I certainly expect it's going to be a close game. Both those offenses are pretty good. Neither of those defenses are particularly good. In a larger sense, I think a lot of AAC fans came into this season expecting that it was going to look like last season. And I don't know how to break this to people, but we got free agency in college football. The plan is off. Every season is a new season. So, yeah, North Texas going to take it to Memphis. That's my prediction.
Yeah, sounds good. Joe, how about you?
I went 3-2. Thank you, Sun Devils, for making me look smart as I picked you to cover the 6 and you won outright against Utah. Boise State covered against Hawaii, and Ashton Jente made another statement for being a dark horse for the Heisman. And BYU obliterated Arizona. So they covered the Buckeyes and the Cyclones ruined the other one because I had West Virginia to cover the +3. So I've got 6 this week. I actually added one off script because I had to. So pick number 1. You know I like to go back to the well. I'm taking Arizona State +2.5 at Cincinnati. I wish it was 3, but I like them to actually be competitive enough to win this game. I just feel like they carry that momentum. Hopefully they don't have a big game hangover. Pick number 2 is Friday night. The Duke Blue Devils against Florida State -3.5. Look, Florida State's a dumpster fire and needs a complete retool. And the Blue Devils are on the exact opposite trajectory as they're 5-1 behind the arm of sophomore quarterback Malik Murphy. I think the Blue Devils get it done at home. Pick number 3 is Texas Tech -6.5 against Baylor. It's an off year for Baylor, and Texas Tech is 5-1 with wins over Arizona, the Mean Green of North Texas, Cincinnati, and Arizona State, who just beat Utah. The Red Raiders, I believe, roll and win on a blowout. This one's a lock for me. Then I've got some action. I got Buffalo in a pick 'em, pretty much. They're -0.5 against Western Michigan. Western Michigan is barely .500, and Buffalo is showing flashes of being good enough to compete for the MAC title this year. With no spread in their home stadium, I love Buffalo in this game. And pick number 5 is going to probably surprise you a little bit, but I got Georgia Tech +11 at home against Notre Dame. I am not saying that Georgia Tech wins this game, but Notre Dame has proven to stumble in tough spots, and 11 points is too good not to take. I think Tech hangs around in this game and keeps it within 10 at worst. And then for my bonus pick, I am absolutely taking Charlotte +18, which it is now against.
I talked you into it. I'll take credit for that.
I was leaning that way. I almost said 7 and took the Mean Green because I was leaning that way too. But I think Charlotte, after what they did at ECU, is going to score plenty of points and do enough to stay in the game against Navy and keep this thing close going into the fourth quarter.
Navy is due to bounce. I mean, yeah. Both the service academies are probably due, you know, to look mortal, but Navy is really due to look mortal because that defense is not that great.
Yes. All right. So take FAU to cover 4 against UTSA. I think both teams are struggling. I think FAU will finally get it together and beat that game. Take 59.5 under Bama and Tennessee. Bama has not been consistent on offense. Same points, different team. And Tennessee will score. I think it's going to be a 40-45 point game. The final score will be something like 27-17, something like that. I will roll again with the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. When I picked this earlier, the line was 5.5 against Notre Dame. I think they'll still cover. They'll lose by a field goal, you know, Notre Dame, but I think it's going to be closer than the experts think because Georgia's a good team, man. Georgia Tech's a good team. They have a decent running offense, and if they get going, like, they can keep Notre Dame off the field. And if Riley Leonard's not in the game, he can't win it for you. So that is the end of that. And we have another segment in that we're going to toss in. We're going to toss it over to James from Brigade Review because he wants to give a little bit of an update on the Lambert Trophy before we close out the show. So over to you, James.
Yeah, so I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I'll be a voting member on the reestablished Lambert Trophy, which is the best team in the East historically. So we released today the eligibility criteria for schools and who's going to be considered for this year. So traditionally, right, each region of the country has its own conference. The Midwest has the Big Ten. The West Coast had the Pacific Coast Conference, became the AAWU, and then the PAC series. The Central U.S. Great Plains had the Big Eight, turned Big 12. The Southwest had the Southwest Conference. Southeast had the Southeast Conference. And then the Lower Atlantic had the ACC. Obviously, things have changed. We have schools playing cross coasts in the same conferences now. But historically, there was no championship for New England, New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, New Jersey, that area. So there was a trophy established in 1936, the Lambert Trophy. Army's won it a couple times in the last 10 years. Navy won it the last 10 years. Pitt has won it. Penn State wins it a lot, obviously, but we're bringing it back. Right now it's sitting in the trophy room at West Point, but there was no voting body for a few years. So now there's a voting body. They're going to start awarding the trophy again, which is great news for, number one, just sort of the regional history of college football that has gone by the wayside, and, you know, just fans of the history of the game. So this year, the eligible members will be any FBS member playing in New England, New York, New Jersey, Delaware, and Pennsylvania, plus two exceptions. So that's UMass, UConn, Boston College. So the three New England schools, the three New York schools, so Syracuse, Buffalo, and Army, the New Jersey school and Rutgers, the three Pennsylvania schools, which are Penn State, Temple, and Pittsburgh. And then your exceptions are schools in Maryland and West Virginia that have historic ties to independence in the states listed prior. So that's Navy and West Virginia, who played annual rivalries with many of the schools in those states. So those are the eligible teams. And then in year to year, depending on where other teams are and how many games they play against those teams from the eligible states, they could apply and become eligible, but there are no teams that meet that threshold this year. So those are the eligible teams. Whoever has the most successful season at the end will win the trophy. And that doesn't mean that, you know, Penn State's going to win every year, even though they're 7-5, because Penn State has five stars on their roster and would beat another team on a neutral field. But the most successful season is going to win the trophy.
So not Temple this year.
I don't think Temple has a realistic shot, Joe.
Yeah. All right. So we're at the end of the show. Another week of college football is in the record books. Army has a tough matchup this week. We'll cover that live and open on the Army football show tomorrow. So if you're joining us tonight, jump in tomorrow and we'll be able to read your comments live as we're doing this in an open room for the show tomorrow. But for the crew here at As for Football Ring Knocker Radio, I'm Rob, the Angry Colonel, calling out of Fayetteville, North Carolina. We got James from Brigade Review in the state of Oklahoma. We've got Dano Icabesa calling out of Coastal Connecticut, folks. Trigger Joe in the home of the Big House. And joining us today from the Boneyard Podcast is Jared. And hey, check out the Boneyard Podcast. James will be on there tomorrow. But if you are an Eastern Carolina and you need to check them out every week because he's got great content and talks about ECU football. And I hear ECU is a great school to party, but it's also got a football team that is on the way up, and Joe is shaking his head. So anyway, thanks for joining us this week, and we will talk to you guys next week. And as always, beat the Pirates.
Beat them.
Thanks for joining us on the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. Special thanks to our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're buying or selling, reach out to Jocelyn for expert service. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/askforfootball. Your support will help keep the lights on and bring in more great content. Plus, you'll get access to exclusive perks and behind-the-scenes extras. Thanks for being a part of the Ask for Football community. Go Army, beat Navy, and we'll catch you guys next week.